Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/campaign to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In this episode, Nick Rose, CFO at Enable, shares how he brings a transformational mindset to his role, describes how he's building a team that faces business challenges head on, and illustrates why adaptability is such an important quality in a CFO. Hi, I'm Ross, and this is the CFO Playbook, where each week you'll get insights from world-class financial leaders to help you grow your company, yourself, and face the challenges required of today's CFO. Before we jump into the interview, we want to invite you, our listeners, to head to our show notes to find a link to our listener survey. We want to learn from you to make the CFO Playbook even better. As a thank you, you'll be entered into a competition to win your choice of an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy Tab S7. We would love your feedback. Nick, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ross. Good to be here.
Nick, I'd love to start with your current role as CFO at Enable. What's interesting is you were in two locations that were unusually paired. So one is Stratford and the other is San Francisco. So what led to that unusual pairing of Stratford and San Francisco in your current role?
Well, Enable was originally a British company, and it was founded by two guys a few years ago, back in the kind of early 2000s, to be a software, professional services software company. So we'd write software for other people and deliver it and hand over the IP and all that sort of thing. And then about 5 years ago, we pivoted the whole business into being a software as a service, one main product with loads of different attributes and uses and everything. And it was all founded in Stratford-upon-Avon, which is where we have all of our UK team today, apart from a handful who are remote. And 2.5 years ago, when I joined, the whole strategy was going off to raise venture funding to help us grow the business faster and really make a big deal out of this product we've got, because we think it's got real legs and the vision we've got is really aggressive growth and really ambitious. And the best place to raise money from a technology point of view is San Francisco, Silicon Valley, the Bay Area. So we spent some months building a contact and getting to know some people out there. And then in November 2019, we went out there for a week or two, did some speed dating with lots of VCs, and were lucky enough to persuade a couple of them to invest in us. And as part of doing that, you have to become an America First company. And that was absolutely our intention. And we made it very clear to the investors that, you know, we are really serious about breaking into North America in a big way. It's by far the biggest market for us. And in order to do that, our chief executive actually relocated, so now lives and is resident in San Francisco, which is where the VCs are based. It was a pretty natural step to become a Californian top company. We've still got our UK operation, hence Stratford and San Francisco. And we opened an office in Canada now, as well as in Toronto. We hired our first Canadians in March of last year, 2021, and opened our actual physical office in September. So we're now a three location company.
It's a very interesting journey. It's not that common. You'll hear of like a 17-year-old company then seeking to go down the venture route, having pivoted just shortly before it. Has it been the same founding team that's been there since the very beginning that's now still at the company as you're trying to scale it?
Yeah, in terms of leadership, yes. Wow. So Andrew, our chief executive, he's one of the founding pair. The other guy, Dennis, is a board member still. And our longest servers are our COO, our head of engineering, and they've both been around for a number of years as well. And really, it's growing with the company and getting really excited about the journey that we're on. And if you're good enough people, then people can change in that way as well.
Of course, and it makes sense. It's just amazing that they've ridden this wave, and also going from a service-based, well, yeah, they were developing software, but for services, to actually building your own product and then trying to scale and monetize it. It's a huge shift in business model and also mentality, which is really impressive.
Yeah. And it's not without its transformation pains within the business. But I think the way we've communicated it and engaged most of the team, they're all with us on that journey, and there's some really great people. The vast majority of the company, having said that, have been with us for less than a year and a half now. So we grew from about just under 100 people at the start of last year to 220 by the end of the year. So more than half of the company is less than a year in.
Yet another example of going through this incredible growth in the midst of a very challenging economic and social environment with the pandemic.
Yeah, it's been interesting. we've been lucky enough to have raised funding during the pandemic. And, you know, without that, the story would have been very different. We'd have been battening down those hatches and making sure we conserved cash rather than spending it on growing the team and trying to grow the business faster than cash generation would ever allow. So, yeah, we are deliberately burning cash. That's the pattern that we have to follow. And as a result of doing that, we've been able to grow sales teams, customer success teams, implementation, and the whole engineering team, as well as the support functions, in such a way that it's supporting what we call hyper growth. We're dipping for the line towards our end of year, at the end of this month in January, and we're hoping to have grown by 250% in the year. So it seems to be working.
And so then what was that transition like for you? So, you know, prior to Enable, you had spent a long time at Travis Perkins, which is, again, this huge enterprise, public company, in a variety of roles. So to then switching across to different industry, in completely different stage, and then, of course, leading as a CFO for, I believe, the first time, what was that transition like?
Yeah, interesting one. It's going from sort of 24,000 colleagues to about 70. At the point I joined was an interesting one, but I did several roles at TP, including finance leadership roles and an insight into what it's like being a public company and some operational roles as well. But what I spent the last 3 or 4 years doing there was business transformation and change, driven by system change. And one of the first systems that I was able to bring into Travis Perkins was one to deal with rebate management. You know, TP's got a huge amount of rebate income from suppliers and rebate payments out to customers. Very difficult to manage. You know, a lot of it was done on spreadsheets and really needed to modernize, for want of a better description. So my role was to go find a solution that would help Travis Perkins basically make the most out of its trading agreements with its trading partners. And long story short, found Enable, did a deal with the Enable leadership who are still there and now my colleagues. We developed that system jointly for about a year and a half and then implemented it into Travis Perkins. Really, it was chance conversations with them. I really love the vision, obviously love the product. And I said, you know, you've got a great strategy and a great opportunity in front of you. If you need someone to come and help you with finance, give me a call. And they, a few months later, that happened. So here I am, you know, not looking back at all. Some of the bits I most enjoyed in Travis Perkins were where you work as a small team and really create real change and make things really happen. And you can do that in a small business that's got big ambition far more than you ever can in a great big oil tanker type business that's, you know, got its own process and hurdles you have to get over to make change happen.
I'd imagine the mindset shift was pretty significant, because even the term transformation, it exists in larger companies. And I used to I'm a recovering consultant for my sins. So I used to engage with lots of the companies of TPE size and elsewhere. Often we would be there on some type of transformation program. But the whole premise of that was that the rest of the business is operating as usual. Whereas you, as someone who was bringing transformation, you would bring change. But in Enable's stage and scale, there almost is no standard operating procedure, because you're probably outgrowing everything you've built. So you're in this, it sounds cliched, but you're almost in like this constant state of change.
Oh, totally. The scale and pace of what we're trying to achieve is nothing like anything I've ever experienced or seen before. And it's engaging and rewarding being part of that. I love changing things, and I love making things work more smoothly, work better, and working with good people to make that happen. So yeah, there's been a whole load of different things. You know, when I joined, we were one country only. We're now in three. We're about to open in Australia. That'll be four. We've never raised money before. We've now done that twice. We've never done so many different things. And since I've been here, we've been really pushing the boundaries as a team, and resetting strategy, resetting our thoughts and goals to be ever more ambitious, I guess.
And one of the themes that comes up, a recurring theme with many guests that we've had on, is the evolving role of the CFO in that strategy development process. So, you know, many, many moons ago, there would have been less influence on it. It would have been much more of a reporting, operational type of ownership and responsibility. Whereas now there's a need to be a catalyst for change and a creator of the company strategy. Is that the way that you view your role and the way that you contribute to the Enable company strategy?
We have a executive team that is really tight, really close. And I believe we work really well as a team together, and we respect each other's strengths and what we bring to the table. I suppose one of the angles that I can bring is, having been a customer, I've bought the product, implemented it, albeit 3 or 4 years ago, but I've firsthand felt the pain points that our actual prospective customers feel. And so I can get involved in understanding how we're prospecting to them, how we're doing our pitches, and also talking to them about the benefits that I've seen firsthand. So that does help me, I guess, create more influence. And putting things together as a CFO, I've got to understand where we're aiming for and try and turn that into a financial plan that supports that growth of the business. And so that means getting under the skin of all the evolution of team sizes and shapes, and what are we going to invest our marketing money in, all the rest of it, make it hang together as a coherent business plan.
And I'd imagine as well, the fact that not just that you were a customer and bought it, but actually you exist, so that's for the existing product, but you also are almost like the ideal profile for a prospective customer. So you can shape product roadmap, even positioning, marketing. So in many ways, you're the best form of customer research, because you're already in the team and people can come to you. Is that the role that you and maybe even beyond you, that your team play at Enable?
Yeah, our sales team and customer guys can always bounce stuff off us, and we do help them kind of wrestle through problems sometimes. I think, you know, if I'm being self-critical, probably not enough. We should be doing more of it. We also have a cadence where we reach out to our existing customers, the ones who've been with us a while and have really onboarded and adopted the product. We have customer advisory sessions where we get them in and ask them to talk in real detail about how they're getting on with the product, what they'd like to see change, share best practice. And that we've held two of these so-called customer advisory boards now, and they've gone down really well. So we're holding more.
Thinking back to that previous role that you had, which was like leading transformation, did that help prepare you for the role that you're currently in and switching to such a fast-moving environment?
Oh, totally, yeah. The transformation projects I got involved with were all driven because of a need to change technology. In order to make technology change stick, you need to bring people with you and A, have great people designing what you're going to do and working on the implementation and configuration and all those things, but really win the hearts and minds of the people that the change is being done for. And all of the change we're doing within Enable is being done for our people. Because we're a Silicon Valley software company, we have a equity plan where every single one of our colleagues owns part of the business. So it's being done for them all the time. And I think that's really, really important. And I used some of that experience. We've just changed our ERP system within the finance space. We threw the old one out and put a new one in over the summer. And it, the whole project went pretty smoothly. We went live 1st of October, and it's not fallen over yet. So we're pretty happy.
I imagine that your previous experience will maybe help with that, because I was going to say, because if you've seen enough, that I'm sure there've been the odd failure, or even just actually doing something as complex as actually building and implementing new systems for a 24,000 employee company, it actually allows you to just handle like a huge level of complexity when it comes to that type of thinking.
Yeah, and the project plan's not so different.
No,
and the advantage is there's only a handful of people you need to win over, mm-hmm. and you can do that face to face and really personally, rather than by kind of major mass communication.
And so then you've got a unique position then actually to maybe offer your thoughts on the theme of automation in finance. So the automation has always been around, of course, like systems have always played a role, but there's at least a thesis that areas like marketing and sales and even engineering experienced this wave of automation through different, SaaS and cloud products over the past decade or 15 years. And that actually now the G&A functions, both HR and finance and others, are actually, there's a whole raft of new solutions and services that are doing the same for those areas. Is that how you see it? Because you've obviously seen it over a long period of time.
Oh, for sure, definitely. So I like to think about it as, I guess, the traditional role of finance is one of keeping score and making sure the accounts add up, pretty dull stuff, really. Very important to do, very important to get right as well. But it's not that inspiring. You relate back to what you were talking about. Finance didn't really used to have much of an impact on strategy or really thinking about how to develop the business. And the second role has always traditionally been around control, financial control. Have you got the right authority processes in place and all those things? Again, really, really important, clearly not so inspiring and not so much fun. But what really I think has evolved, and it's the last number of years, this is not new stuff, but insight and business analysis and business support, decision support, really giving the business advice that's useful, helping it point in the right direction. So, and through automation, the necessity has been for finance people to handle major mass amounts of data and spot trends, spot opportunities, spot risks within a sea of data. And because I guess finance people are trained in a certain way, they're at home handling massive amounts of data and spreadsheets and seeing those stories that the data tells you, and bringing them to life and saying, hey, if we do this, we can avoid all these low margin sales, or we can concentrate on products that get us more returns. So I think automation is driving better advice from the finance team. You can get more insight and more depth and more credibility, I suppose, in what you're saying. So the more the better from my perspective. Then you think about, automation. Well, everyone's trying to modernize their ERP system, and there's lots of really old clunky solutions out there that everyone moans about and everything. But what I see happening more and more is those systems of record that should just be there to do that bread and butter stuff, the really, the keep the double entry, the keeping of the general ledger. You're not really going to set the world on fire by having a different way of approaching a general ledger report. But what comes in is these best of breed point solutions like Enables, and I would say that, but I genuinely believe it, to really give your company a point of difference and make something that is in an area that you have lots of opportunity within. So what we help with rebates is, if you're collecting the right amounts, predicting you're getting the right amounts, allocating the cash to the right products, handling your trading agreements really well, there's many, many dollar signs and pound signs in there to have a go at. And that's why I see the kind of base system is fine. Bringing these smaller point systems in over the top of that is a much better bet in terms of getting access to those upsides that you really want.
So from your perspective, again, you've just recently put in a new ERP. So that's like the foundation for you to now layer on all of these new best of breed solutions, of course, of which Enable would be one.
Yeah. I mean, well, we don't need to use our own. We're not big enough or complex enough for that. But as an example, we've just put in this ERP and I've already got two software change programs on top of that. So one is a product that helps us make head or tail of the American sales tax system, does all our filings for us and works out whether we should be charging sales tax in particular states or not. Great product, but it sits on top of our ERP system because the ERP can't do that. It doesn't keep up to date with the legislation at that level of granular detail that we need. And we've got another one on the go that is a compensation calculation program. So again, it takes data out of, number one, our sales system, and number two, our ERP, puts it all into the calculator that we've built within it, within the product, and it'll spit out the compensation we need to pay to our sales team for the deals that they've won in that quarter. Previous to that, we were doing it through a laborious manual spreadsheet and probably making mistakes and certainly were unable to really show the account executives how their compensation was properly calculated at that time. Now they've got a login to it, or will have, and we'll be able to see exactly how it's put together themselves, and it will make them feel much more supported and much more trusting of the numbers because they can drill in and understand the calculations themselves.
And that sounds as if that's something that's driven by you and the finance team rather than coming from IT, for example.
Oh, yeah. We have a big hand in driving it, but I work with the other OZEC guys and say, well, what can I do to better help you guys? And our sales leader was saying, we really need something to help on compensation. So well, let's go find something.
Yeah. And then so that you've clearly prioritized that. And then imagine that you've got a raft of ideas of like the next waves of automation and then the next programs that you set up for, because there's so many areas that you can add these best of breed solutions in.
Oh, there's a few still to come, yeah.
Would there be any like on your hit list as areas where you think actually these are problems that I would love to get to next?
So, well, the one that's fast following for us is getting our expenses approach into the modern age, making sure we've got control over our company spend and making it far easier for our people to actually charge expenses that are within an authorized process rather than guessing and trying to get pre-approvals and putting claims in on a clunky system.
Yeah, so another area where you can automate. And I find this fascinating because one of the things that often comes up as well is that in order to implement these new technologies and these tools, it does two things. One is it frees up the people who are like very strong in analysis in your team to, as you said, I love that expression, give better advice to the business. But then also it actually in some cases requires a more technical skill set and mindset within the finance team to be able to understand these tools, to select the tools, to help design them with other partners around the business. Is that something you've seen in the demands on your team and therefore the people who you want?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say I've got a really strong team, forward-looking, open to change. The whole implementation of the ERP was done absolutely open arms, willingly, despite a couple of the guys having used the old system for quite a long time. There was no real significant barrier to change, and that was really important. Otherwise, we'd probably have fallen over at times in the project. And when I've hired a couple of people as well, and what I look for is real energy, real forward thinking, and real willingness to look for different solutions and try something new. And my litmus test of that when they get into an interview scenario is, how much do they already know about us? How much have they bothered to find out? And how much energy can they bring to the role? Are they lively people? Or are they kind of laid back, sitting back and kind of thinking long and hard about answers rather than just having a chat and talking naturally?
So that, I find that interesting because in interviews, something I've been tussling with myself recently is that it's very easy to slip back to testing on knowledge, rather than like on some of the attitudes and some of like you're referring to like attitudes and energy. And even with the idea of being forward thinking, it's more attitudinal than anything else. I'm trying to challenge myself more and more to get away from the knowledge and go into something that's almost like deeper psychological. Do you have any tips on how you approach that? Like you mentioned one for energy, but how else do you get make sure that you're getting the right profiles, not just the people who know how to sell themselves in an interview?
Well, you can always look at what people have on their CVs, and you know if they've got a financial accountant on their CV, then they're probably qualified. They've probably done a number of years of posting journals and doing management accounts and working all that stuff. So I always ask them what change projects they've been in. How did they go? What did they do? What did they learn about themselves from that? You know, that can tell you a lot. And business improvement projects in the same vein. And you can begin to piece away about whether they are people who run towards a business improvement challenge or have just kind of been put on this project just because they were, you know, on the right chair at the right time. You know, so how did they really make it happen?
I like that. I like the what did they learn about themselves. So maybe, Nick, if you indulge me, can I turn the tables? So in your 2.5 or so years at Enable, in your time as a CFO, going through all of that change that we spoke about, what have you learned about yourself in this recent experience since moving on from TP?
I've learned I'm hugely adaptable. I can throw my mind to lots of different things. I have a real deep care for our team and making sure people are comfortable and supported and in that sort of way, and actually not only know what's expected of them and how they're getting on and where they stand, but actually that people care about them as well. I'm quite a strong believer in that sort of thing. And I guess I've learned I've got a lot of energy to try and keep balls in the air. And when they've got challenges on many, many different fronts, keeping things moving is just the most important thing. And, you know, trying to be, I guess, an inspiring leader to the rest of the business. And I've learned that in some small way, I can help do that.
And you touch on a couple of points. I'd love to get even more advice from you on. One is the inspiring leader. But the second is the trying to push things forward. Like, because you have, and this is increasingly indicative of most CFOs, an incredible like breadth of responsibility, and you're trying to scale a company rapidly, you're fundraising, which is always on top of the day job, of course, as well, even though it is a core part of the job. How do you manage your time so that you can actually achieve so much and do so much, and where you're very time poor, I'd imagine?
Definitely time poor. I guess that's always going to be the same old answer, is prioritization. Try and make sure you're not just answering those who are shouting loudest, but what you think the business really needs the most. What is the fundamentals that you have to do every day or every week? And just try and keep ahead of schedule, see things coming. And I think one of the things that really helps us do that, and I referred to it earlier, is how closely knit the executive team are. So we have a really clear view of our direction, our strategy, our hiring plans, our people. And I suppose what makes it work is our ability to make decisions really quickly. And, you know, we set ourselves objectives and key results, OKRs, every quarter. Most businesses I've ever seen set them every year. And that drives the pace of change. So if ever I know, I need to know what are my real priorities this quarter, because you step back and think about, we set them at the company level first, and then we set them by team, and then we roll them down to the individual. So if anyone ever wants to know what they should be doing, they should be looking at their team and their individual OKRs, which we know roll up to support what the company's trying to do, whether it's that very quarter, the next quarter, or a longer term thing. So for every 3 months, we're trying to deliver so much, but it is quite controlled and quite visible what each team's trying to achieve.
There's some sage advice in there for everyone. And perhaps just one other question on the, like, touching back on that point of inspiration. I think that now, whether it's real or not, the great resignation, people re-evaluating what they're doing in the pandemic, you know, the incredible fight to hire talent, it's almost as it is challenging in London as it now is in the Bay Area, and then it's kind of spreading all over. And I think what's becoming clear is that people are looking at companies and they're expecting a lot, and they're not just expecting compensation or the benefits. They're expecting a sense of purpose, and they often are really analysing the leaders and the teams they're working with. And that's where that leadership that you mentioned in trying to offer that sense of purpose and inspiration is so important. What are the ways that you try and do that with your team and, of course, with the broader company at Enable?
Look, I think just be myself. How would I be anything else? And if I can bring people along with me through showing the amount I care about our success and what we need to do to get there, and the amount I care about our people and supporting them, then you know people generally will follow that if they actually believe what you're saying. And I think you have to show track record. So we're about to launch our third all employee survey. We did one last February, one in August, and we've really taken those seriously. So anonymous feedback, and we've corralled that feedback into certain themes, and we're showing the company every month our all hands meetings and more regular communication outside of that what we're doing about it. And so people are beginning to see, oh, well, it really was anonymous, because there were some comments that you can imagine, and actually those are taken as constructive feedback, and we're doing stuff about them, but we're constantly relating our change programs and our things we're trying to do to make our employees' working life just that much better. We're constantly relating it back to the feedback that we've received, so we're listening and therefore we're doing stuff. And I think that's really important. So you set the example, and you're actually really really driving that and making sure people can see you. You're visible. You're always happy to stop and have a chat with people. It's a small company still. I reckon I know almost everyone in it.
I think that topic of visibility is all the more important, especially, well, you're already a distributed team anyway, because you have different offices in different countries. But then as some people are remote or many are remote, it's even more important to be visible in different channels.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the visibility, you know, where would we be today without video calls, right? So I could not imagine how the last 2 years would have ever gone without that. But, you know, we are now, especially as a leadership team, now borders are opening up a little bit. We are traveling a bit. And that's important to get a kind of worldwide connection with our people.
And Nick, as we draw to a close, I always like to ask our guests like what advice they would give to others who are perhaps aspiring to be in your position and would like to be a CFO one day, but they're slightly early in their career. So what advice would you give them so that they could, first of all, achieve that goal and then be successful when they find that position?
Being true to yourself is actually a bit of a cliche, but it really works. Be sure of what you're doing. Don't ever be afraid to ask for help. I've seen some people try and struggle on and not get very far because they're struggling on without knowing an answer. But remember, you can't do anything unless you do it through people. So, you know, what do I actually do day to day? Most times it's working with people, influencing them, making things happen. And you've got to have good people around you to achieve that. It's simple to me.
I think that's great advice. Nick, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I've really appreciated you taking the time.
Thanks very much, Ross.
One last thing. We want to hear from you, our listeners, to learn how we can make the CFO playbook even better. Head to our show notes to find a link to our listener survey. As a thank you, you'll have the opportunity to win your choice of an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy Tab S7. We'd love your feedback. This show is brought to you by Soldo, the brighter way to manage business spending and expenses. With Soldo, you can control every expense, track spend in real time, automate financial reporting, and then use those insights to fuel growth. Learn more at soldo.com.